All right, welcome to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you. Because it's late out here on the East Coast, we're giving Blair and Barker a bit of a blow. So tonight you get a solo edition of Jay's Talk with yours truly, I'm sure to the chagrin of most and the delight of a select few. But 2-1 loss for the Blue Jays is what we are here to discuss. And you know what? You want to text or call about Canada soccer at Copa America? You know what? Go right ahead. I'm just a relative novice or, slash casual observer of soccer, like generally speaking, but it was pretty fun seeing Canada advance to the Copa America semifinals on penalties. But hey, whatever you want to talk about tonight, Jays, soccer, life, 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cellular device, 590-590, name and location. Now you guys often prefer the text line on these late-er nights. So that's the people's text line. And as you guys know, it's always open. I know it was a close game for basically the whole outing, a pitcher's duel. I don't know about you guys. I kind of like pitcher's duels in Major League Baseball. I like them more when the Blue Jays win, but still. It wasn't like the worst loss I've ever seen, but who knows? Maybe Jesse Marsh should be put in charge of the Jays at this point. Couldn't be much worse, right? When Team Canada comes back from Copa America, just put March in charge of team building. Actually, in all seriousness, the men's soccer team probably took some heat off the Jays for at least one night, given the monumental win. But still, tonight, the Jays getting shut down, Castillo in the bullpen letting up just 2 hits and 1 run, which was a Kiermaier solo home run over the course of this entire game. I did want to start by chatting about Kevin Gausman. Because the last time out, Jesse Rubinoff, will be on with me tomorrow and on Sunday, or I guess later today and Sunday, given that it's past midnight on the East Coast. But the last time out, we kind of opined a little bit about Gausman because, I was a little concerned. And not because I thought he would suddenly turn into a pumpkin or anything, but because he is so good, for him to be anything less than great, it was a little surprising and frankly concerning. But the last time out, he allowed 7 earned runs and issued 5 walks over 4 1/3. And the lack of command from Gausman was almost startling. But tonight, 6 innings pitched, 2 runs, both of which were earned. It was a Luke Raley 2-run double, 10 strikeouts. He threw 104 pitches, 72 of which were strikes. So 10 strikeouts for Gausman gives him his 16th double-digit strikeout game as a member of the Blue Jays, which is pretty phenomenal, honestly. But we hadn't really seen that a lot from Gausman this year. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't seen a lot of heavy strikeout games. And again, I'm not saying you need the strikeout to be successful, but like, that has largely been a part of his game because of so much swing and miss by the splitters. Certainly he gets by with the 4-seam fastball as well. But tonight, after that 7 earned run, 5 walk outing against the Yankees last time out, tonight he looked much more in the zone. I mean, he wasn't perfectly, certainly, but I felt much better. Now, again, I think the strikeouts, I think you take it with a bit of a grain of salt because the Mariners are a team that offer a ton. They strike out a lot. And I had not realized this, but coming into this game, they had struck out, this is before the game, right? They had struck out 912 times this season. That is the most strikeouts in all of Major League Baseball. So from comparison, the team that had struck out the second most times were the Oakland Athletics, who had struck out 857 times coming into tonight. So like a relatively big difference between like 1 and 2. It's not like they had struck out 10 more times or 5 more times than team number 2. It's a lot, right? Also, if you're curious, the Jays entering play tonight actually have struck out the 5th least in Major League Baseball. But still, knowing that the Mariners strike out a ton, Gausman really challenged them, especially with the 4-seamer. And we've talked about this before, but the velo did not look to be an issue today as it has been at times. The fastball averaging about 95 and a half miles an hour across his whole start today, which is pretty good. I mean, we had seen the velo dip down to, 91, 92 miles an hour at times where you're a little concerned because he's not that old. And, is that a problem? Is it weather? Pretty nice in Seattle today. Looks like the roof was open and they have, thankfully, which I'm very thankful for this, T-Mobile Park has a retractable roof, which is really nice. So good for Seattle. That's what you want. But today he was pretty careful with certain batters. Like Cal Raleigh, he was pretty careful with him. It seems prudent given what we've seen slash heard from Raleigh over the course of his time against the Toronto Blue Jays. But we did see him absolutely blow a few guys away with that fastball a couple times. The one that comes to mind the most is JP Crawford. He's swinging away like he was like cutting down a tree on a 97-mile-an-hour four-seamer. 16 whiffs on that fastball, which he threw 61 of 104 times. The splitter looked good as well, 27 of those, and he mixed in a few more sinkers and sliders. He actually threw 9 sliders tonight, 7 sinkers, and we hadn't seen those pitches that often. Even when his pitch count had gotten elevated in previous starts, like you'd see him throw like, you know, 2 sinkers, 3 sinkers, 2-3 sliders, not that many. And again, 9 and 7 sliders and sinkers respectively is not that much, but again, he used them pretty effectively, which is good to see. It's a step forward, I think, right? It's a step forward. You hope this is something he can perhaps corral a little bit going forward into this season, going ahead. Probably see one more start from Gausman, probably because it's a day off on Monday, so probably to start or in the second day of the last series, which I believe is in Arizona. So maybe we see him one more time before the season goes into the mid-year break with the All-Star break coming up. But Gausman had spoken before about making mechanical adjustments, making, you know, smaller general adjustments mid-game. So it seems like he might have found something that worked for him. I'm very curious how the heavy usage of the four-seam fastball is going to play to batters going forward, because obviously you can't throw the splitter like on every pitch, right? So I am curious to see how much that plays going forward against teams that perhaps strike out a little bit less than the Seattle Mariners. But hey, I mean, it's definitely a step forward for someone we still, I think, label the team's ace, right? And again, of course, Gausman was matched up against the other team's ace today in Luis Castillo, and that in a similar fashion did not work out super great for the Blue Jays offense, but we'll talk about that. But definitely a good step for one Kevin Gausman. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. And the people's text line is always open. Let's look at the text line. Rob from Belleville. Rob says, oh, Rob texting, I forgot, if you guys want to talk about the Canada soccer game, you certainly can as well. And Rob took me up on that offer. Rob says, I don't watch soccer. I loved watching that game. Felt great. Gave me something to do until the Jays game. At least it wasn't a blowout, which seems like a moral victory at this point in the season. Their pitcher was unreal. It's true, right? I mean, Luis Castillo was phenomenal tonight. He really was. I know that's not an excuse, because the Blue Jays offense has been not very good for most of the season. Having said that, it did feel like the Blue Jays offense had turned it around at some point in the last, a couple of weeks even? Like, even if you're just limiting it to 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks or whatever it was, we saw a lot of 9-run games in there, 5, 6, 7 run games in there. Like, we saw better results and better swings, and it felt like better decisions. So it's not an excuse to say, I don't think at least, to say that Luis Castillo came in there and carved them up like a Thanksgiving turkey, because the truth is the offense was not pretty tonight, right? Like, so Kiermaier's solo home run was the only run they managed on 2 hits, not only against Castillo, but just over the whole game. The bullpen also came down and shut it down. That Kiermaier solo home run, by the way, broke up a Castillo no-hitter. Funnily enough, it came, I'm not kidding, mere seconds after Ismael Kone sent Canada through to the Copa America semifinals, but which is pretty remarkable. We have the 2 TVs here in baseball control, and one happened, then the other happened within like the span of 30 seconds, which is pretty cool. But Castillo, he throws a lot of four-seamers. He threw it, so entering play tonight, he threw it about 44.5% of the time, and tonight he was basically right in line with that. 43% of the time he threw it. He also threw the sinker 20 times, so essentially if you add those two together, the amount of times he threw the four-seamer, the amount of times he threw the sinker, he basically threw a fastball 62% of the time. And so the Jays saw some kind of fastball out of Castillo's hands almost 2/3 of the time all night. And like, you know, they did not hit it particularly well. And we know the team struggles against the fastball, and it doesn't seem like that's something that's changing anytime soon, right? Like, the velo on those 2 pitches, the four-seamer and the sinker, average both, funnily enough, 95.8 miles an hour, and it maxed out at 97.4 miles an hour for the four-seamer and 97.2 miles an hour for the sinker. So not great. The reason I focus on that is because the elite pitchers of Major League Baseball have shown an ability to do this against all teams, certainly, but the Blue Jays have just not been able to get things going against elite pitchers this year. Like, these are guys we've seen this year. We just saw Luis Castillo. Framber Valdez pitched a couple days ago, yesterday, actually. Gerrit Cole pitched a couple days ago as well. in his, what, his third start. It was last weekend, I think. Or a couple, again, earlier in the week. Tyler Glasnow pitched against the Blue Jays this year. Here carved them up. Corbin Burns carved them up. And again, these are all guys who have like won the Cy Young or have come close to winning the Cy Young, essentially. And they're all phenomenal. So, you know, they're elite pitchers. But still, I mean, you just want to see some bit of that process get a little bit better. Now, having said that, it doesn't get a lot easier for the Blue Jays against the Seattle Mariners tomorrow, as Ben Shulman mentioned, Emerson Hancock, who I believe got called up a couple days ago. So we'll see Emerson Hancock there. Logan Gilbert is on track as well to be one of the better pitchers in baseball. Bryce Miller is in there. It's just, George Kirby, I believe, is starting on Sunday. Like that, it's a, I don't want to say murderer's row, but I mean, if you're talking about the best rotation in baseball, Seattle might actually have it, or at least be close to it. But it's a tough watching the offense do this on a night in, night out basis. Let's go back to the text line. 590, 590. Name and location. Nicole in Ottawa says, thanks for staying late to do Jay's talk. Hope it means less traffic for your commute home. That is one positive, right? That, right, Tom? That's always good for us. I see here. Let's see. Zero run support. Pathetic defense. From Shim in Halifax. I'm a starting pitcher for the Jays. I'm asking for a trade ASAP. Zero run support is right. I don't know if I'd like, you know, they did have an error today, but defensively, we did see a couple of pretty good plays made today. And again, I mean, the Blue Jays are at a spot in this season where they have clearly sacrificed a bit of this run prevention defensive approach to roster building. We've seen them sacrifice this to a certain extent to try and manufacture runs in some way, shape, or form. And I know many of you have texted about this before to Blair and Barker or to me, or really to any show on the network, but you know, you want to see a little bit more small ball played, and maybe that is the way. But I mean, when you only manage two hits over the course of a whole game, I'm not sure that there's a lot to be done, even with small ball. But I do think that when it comes to defense, while they have sacrificed a little bit, we saw some pretty good plays tonight. I know this is again like a moral victory, right? Talking about like how good Gausman was in a 2-1 loss, and talking about the bullpen, which we'll get to in a second here. And like a handful of defensive plays, I think is absolutely like looking for silver linings. And I've joked about this before, but it does feel like I'm the king of moral victories at this point in the season. Now that the Jays are, I guess they're now a full 10 games under 500. They were 39 and 48 entering the game today. So 39 and 49, 10 games under 500 is not where you want to be ever. But I think it does push the needle firmly in the retool rebuild the phase of where we are in the season. But I mean, that Varsho play, very early on in the game, where he bangs into the wall, Gausman raises his arms. I think that might have been in the bottom of the first inning. That felt like it was forever ago, but it was very early on in the game. But Varsho runs into the wall in like left center at a dead sprint with two runners on. So if that ball falls and bangs off the wall, I almost guarantee at least one run scores. I mean, one run was on second, so one run certainly scores, but maybe even two. And Varsho saved both of those runs. Here's some wild stats. Again, I know this is like a moral victory extraordinaire here, but that catch had a 5% probability of being made. That is ridiculous. It is the third 5% catch probability catch of Varsho's career. It's the sixth 5% catch probability by a Jay in the StatCast era. And Varsho is the only guy with more than one. And it is the 14th 5% catch probability catch in Major League Baseball this whole season, and Varsho is one of two guys with more than one. Like, he covered 124 feet. Like, that is an elite play made by Varsho. Like, he might legitimately be the best defensive player in Major League Baseball. Of course, the other side of a conversation, of really any conversation you have with the Blue Jays this year, but guys not named like Horwitz and Vladdy, and those two guys also did not have great nights tonight. But the other side of the conversation with Varsho is simply that his bat is not very good right now, and it has not been very good all season long. Like, you can get by with Varsho's bat if you have to, right? Like, you can get by if he's the only version of that bat you have in the lineup, right? Like, if he was batting eighth or something, and he's the only guy who's really producing like that, then it's not really a problem, because he's probably in that particular situation. He's probably your starting center fielder, play center field every single game. Kiermaier in this world is probably not a member of the Blue Jays. And I know it seems weird to say that on a night he hit the only run for the Jays, a solo home run. But my point being is just from a roster construction perspective, you can get by with that if like no one else was hitting like that. But the problem, of course, with the Jays is for the most part, everyone not named Horwitz and Vladdy, and like I guess to a lesser extent Springer, since he's heated up as of late, and he did not start tonight, and he only came in very, very late. But I mean, it's a tough watch, right? It's a tough watch when Horwitz is doing, or pardon me, when Varsho is doing what he's doing offensively. And we know he has some pop in there, but it's really feast or famine with him. If you're getting like a Kyle Schwarber-esque result where like he either hits massive dingers or just strikes out, I almost feel like I could live with it, but unfortunately you're not getting that. 590-590, name and location is the text line, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll check the phones, and we'll go back to the text line after the break. You're listening to Jays Talk, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Sudbury on Regent Street and on LaSalle Boulevard. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. We'll be back in a flash. More Jays Talk with me, Sho Ali, after this.
Oh, man. I said it earlier in the year. Varsho is the best outfielder in baseball, and that's taking nothing away from KK or George, but never really ceases to amaze me. I'm just glad he's okay. You know, he kind of plays that way. That was unbelievable. Oh, shit. You know, again. But I didn't know if it went off the wall and he caught it or if he caught it. I mean, that's a really, really tough play. But, you know, at that point in the game, it's the first inning and, you know, error and a hit and, you know, you can kind of see that getting away from you a little bit. So I think that kind of got Kev on a little bit of a roll, too.
That is John Schneider chatting about the ridiculous Varsho catch, which happened out there in left center. It did help out Kevin Gausman. This is true. Because a couple runs might have scored on that play. Two runners on. But ultimately tonight, the Varsho catch, while very cool, does not ultimately change the outcome of tonight's game, which was a 2-1 Blue Jays loss to the Seattle Mariners to start their West Coast swing. It's the first of three in Seattle. And after this series, off day on Monday, Blue Jays head to San Fran and to Arizona before they wrap up the first half of the season. The All-Star break coming very soon. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali with you until the top of the hour. Still some time to give me a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. And it is always open. I see a text here from Henry in Mississauga. You guys should change the name of the postgame show from Jays Talk to Jays Excuses Talk. Ooh, that's a good one. It's time to blow this team up, starting with the front office. This team isn't going anywhere as long as Shapiro is running the team. Thank you, Henry. I appreciate the text. It's actually pretty funny. I got to think that you don't listen very often. I only say this because I feel like all we have talked about in the last, like, I don't know, 2 months has been how people need to be fired and how change needs to be made and you trade everyone and it's time to rebuild, time to retool, whatever. Like, I just feel like that has been the only thing we've talked about to the point where, like, all I feel like we actually haven't talked about on Jays Talk, whether it's me or Jesse or Daniele or whether it's Blair and Barker, of course. I feel like we haven't actually talked about the minutiae of the actual game, which I suppose, like, in theory, that's what the show is for, but you know, ultimately, we've talked a lot about the general direction of this team, and I get you, man. Everyone who has called in or texted in, I think, agrees that there needs to be some kind of change. And the team is now a season worst, 10 games under 500. I mean, I see a text here from Mike in Victoria. Show me and my buddies decided to skip the Seattle trip this year. The risk of spending over $2,000 each to get disappointed was too high. I feel you, man. I feel you. Like, I don't blame you. I don't blame anyone for feeling that way because it has been a rough season. They're 39-49 and they are night in and night out, not a very pretty watch, right? I don't know how close Victoria is to Seattle. I know it's not that far, but I got to think you got to engage in some kind of sea travel to get from Victoria to Seattle. And I guess unless you're flying, but still, I probably also would not spend that much money to go watch the Jays elsewhere. I got to feel like tonight was the first night we're seeing the Blue Jays in Seattle at T-Mobile Park, which we often refer to jokingly, lovingly as Rogers Center West, because so many Canadian fans out on the West Coast go see the team. It's tough to spend that much money. I got to think a lot of those people, probably it was a sunk cost for a lot of those people, but I don't blame anyone for feeling mad or angry that the team is not playing playing very well. There's a tech or a tweet actually, and you can tweet me anytime you want. At SNS Ali with two L's. The Jays are lost. They're 10 games under 500. They're in last place and they're done for the year. Because I had tweeted that at least we got to see Kevin Gausman get back on track. And so Elad says, who the heck cares that Gausman is back on track? I don't know. Like, would you rather the team be lost 10 games under 500 in last place and done for the year and Gausman not be back on track? Like, I think you would you not prefer Gausman pitch well? Even if your only take on this whole situation is that you trade everyone not named Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and anyone who wasn't recently called up from Buffalo, and Gausman is one of those guys. I'm not sure. I don't advocate for that. Gausman should stay on the team. But let's say you do believe that. Wouldn't it be better for Gausman to pitch better than have him be pitching poorly? This has been a weird year for him. That's the only reason I mention it. Like, I don't really think it's going to be a massive change, but come on. You want Gausman to play well. 590-590, name and location is a text line. The people's text line always open. We'll go back to the text, back to the phone lines as well in a sec here. But I did want to read or chat about the bullpen before we read some more text. And we got to see Nate Pearson tonight, and he was the first reliever out of the pen. We've talked a little bit about Pearson a little bit more recently, given the uptick in what looks like a sinker, his usage of this two-seamer. And he seemed to use it a few days ago, which is where we first kind of talked about it in that relief, two-inning relief appearance against the Astros, which I think was on the 2nd of July. It was right after the Canada Day game. And that actually, the game on July 2nd was the lone game the Jays actually won. The problem I find with Pearson, I mean, there are a couple, unfortunately, but the problem I find is when he falls behind in the count, whether it's lack of command or just like good takes from the batters, he throws that four-seamer more. And Chris Litter was talking about this on the radio broadcast tonight, but that four-seamer, it's so straight. Like, it has very little movement on it. But when he gets some movement and can throw as hard as we know he can, there's a lot more success there, which I find that usage of the sinker really interesting. And so to that end, in the bottom of the seventh inning, Julio Rodriguez, I know he's not having the best of years, considering he's like a, you know, a star, elite player, whatever you want to call him. But considering all of that, he's been having an okay to maybe slightly below okay season, given what you expect from a guy who's being paid like a bazillion dollars. So J-Rod comes to the plate, two on, one out, and the first pitch to J-Rod was a 97-mile-an-hour sinker up and in. So maybe it's something we see, and it was a flyout for an out. Maybe it's something we see him use more. It certainly couldn't hurt, given that Pearson's shelf life is something that is likely towards the end than the beginning. We got to see Yenesis Cabrera come on for one out. So he comes on to relieve Pearson. He is someone who has pitched better as of late. And, you know, when we discuss the bullpen, this is really why I wanted to bring up the bullpen. Pearson, Cabrera, Pop, etc. The circle of trust, as you guys know I like to talk about, is pretty much just Chad Green and Trevor Richards. Like, they're pretty much the only two guys who, when they come into a game, I don't feel terrible about. Cabrera is almost there. Like, he's very close, I would say. So if you go back to the beginning of June, including tonight, he's now led up 4 earned runs in 11 and two-thirds innings pitch over the course of, again, including tonight, 12 outings, 12 appearances, let's call it. And to dive further into that, 3 of those 4 earned runs actually came in a blowout loss to the Orioles on June 4th. So really, since his next appearance, which was on June 9th, so from June 9th to tonight, just 1 earned run over 11 innings pitched. He's been well. He's pitching well, I think. I mean, he might be the closest guy to the circle of trust of the existing relievers not named Green or Richards. So you hope that continues. Zach Pop, less so, right? It pains me to say. I know he got out unscathed, but it pains me to say it. But, you know, he's Canadian. I always wish the best for all Canadians in baseball. But it's a tough watch when he's on the mound in high-leverage moments. 590-590, name and location. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Actually, we haven't gone to the phones tonight. Let's go to Adam in Thornhill. Adam, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Shaw? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, it's late tonight. You sound like you're driving. What are you up to tonight?
I am driving. It's true. I'm driving. I'm just driving, listening to the Jays talk, right. Having a cup of coffee. That's all I'm doing.
Well, thanks for calling in.
So let's examine this roster construction for a moment. We need to be a little bit honest about the evaluation of some of the things on this team. George Springer, when he was a Houston Astro back in his prime, wasn't the best hitter on their team. They had Altuve, Correa, Bregman. They had Yordan Alvarez. They even had Michael Brantley, who was a 300 hitter. So a great player like Springer, they were asking him to be basically their fifth or sixth best hitter. When the Blue Jays signed him in 2021, we had Marcus Semien and Bowen Vladdy and Teo and Lourdes Gurriel. So again, he's in a position where all he has to do is be the fifth or sixth best hitter. So if you look at the depth chart in spring training going into this season, if Bowen Vladdy are your best hitters, basically what you're saying is that you're asking George Springer at now 34 with age in decline to be your third best hitter. Well, that's just not fair to put that on him. Secondly, Justin Turner. They signed Justin Turner and they said, well, we needed a middle of the order bat. When has Justin Turner ever been a middle of the order bat? This is not a 35, 40 home run guy. This is a professional hitter who's 15 to 20 home runs. Now, if Justin Turner was, say, on the Los Angeles Dodgers, okay, and you were asking him to be the sixth best hitter behind, you know, Freeman and Ohtani and Smith and Teoscar and Páez, and then the eighth best hitter when Betts and Muncy gets back, okay, that's an upgrade to Chris Taylor, and it's probably a better option than Miguel Vargas right now. That makes sense. But again, you're asking him to be your third or fourth best hitter at 39 years old. He was contemplating retirement after winning the World Series in 2020 with the Dodgers. And now he's 39. He's still kicking. And you're asking him to be the middle of the order bat. So you're putting guys in the wrong roles. That's part of the problem with this team. Second of all, or third of all, they signed Yariel Rodriguez. Now, I know he pitched well the last time, but just consider this for 1 second. Yariel Rodriguez has never pitched professionally in North America, wasn't a draft pick or an international draft pick. He didn't pitch all of last year, won the apparent reliever of the year in Nippon 2 years ago with 54 innings and 60 strikeouts. So you paid a guy five-year deal for a relief pitcher because he wasn't penciled in to be a starter. You panicked and pivoted and tried to stretch him out to be a starter when Manoah was injured and Tiedemann wasn't ready and Bowden Francis was getting lit up. So you gave a relief pitcher who's 28, who's never pitched professionally in North America, a five-year deal. Now, just one last thing. When the Astros signed Josh Hader in the offseason, okay, I know the money's different. He's the best closer in the game, and a lot of people said, ooh, giving a relief pitcher a five-year deal, that's really risky because, you know, of the reliever carousel and things like that. But now you gave Yariel Rodriguez a five-year deal. So even if it works out, it's a tremendous risk that has very little potential for working out. This is, you got to have your head examined to do that. So these are just three examples of, again, just a complete lack of understanding of the macro of what player valuation is in the game. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Adam, thanks for calling in. Always an informative call by you. Always appreciate it, man. I do think when it comes to roster construction, I've harped on this before, but I've always felt that some of the decisions, it basically pointed to too much reliance on bounce back seasons from the existing players. Because like if you're bringing in Justin Turner, they're going to have a huge issue with bringing in Justin Turner. Or if it wasn't Turner and it was JD Martinez, or if it wasn't Martinez and it was Jorge Soler or someone, like I don't have a huge issue. And I know Martinez and Soler have not had the best seasons. And I think the Martinez had a slightly better last couple of weeks. But I mean, generally speaking, those are the guys we talked about in the offseason. And Turner was one of those guys, certainly as well. But and I don't have a huge issue like individually in bringing in those guys. But I do think it basically meant that you needed bounce back seasons from certainly Vladdy. I'll leave Bo out of it because Bo's actually had a pretty bad season, as we know. But Bo was good last year. So I think you were thinking Bo's going to be the exact same or close to it. Vladdy was going to get better. He's going to have a bounce back year. And I think he largely has, but you largely needed a bounce back from Kirk. You needed a bounce back from Springer. You needed a bounce back from Varsho. And it felt like to me, the team hadn't necessarily insulated themselves from the question of what happens if they don't bounce back. And yeah, we've gotten that a little bit from Vladdy and like basically no one else. Unfortunately, things have turned a teensy bit in the last little while, but it's not still where you want it to be. And I just, you know, again, I'm not here to poo-poo the signing of IKF because hand up, I was wrong on that. And from what you've gotten from him this year alone, it's probably already in a pretty good spot in terms of value, even though you do feel like he's probably, I don't want to say overpaid, because I mean, if the guy's been giving you the value he's been giving you, can you really argue he's overpaid? Probably not, right? But the generally speaking, like, you were never going to win a substantial amount of ball games with IKF and Turner as the big offseason signings, right? And even like the signing of Kiermaier. And again, I know it's like an odd time to poo-poo the guy because he's the only person who scored a run tonight. But the general thought process of giving Kevin Kiermaier so much money that no one else seemingly wanted to give him, because this is something we talked about. He like basically came on to talk to the media right after he signed. He was basically like, yeah, no one else wanted to give me this money. Well, okay, that's not great. Not a great move by the Blue Jays front office. And I only bring it up because he got paid so much that it probably precluded you from going out in terms of what the difference was between like Teoscar Hernandez signing with the Dodgers and Teoscar Hernandez returning as a Blue Jay. Probably was the difference there. Because in theory, you could have had you could have not signed Turner, you could have signed Teoscar Hernandez as your DH and still had Varsho, Schneider, Springer in the outfield. And you'd still be having the same conversations about Springer. You'd still be having the same conversations about David Schneider, who has not played particularly well since becoming an everyday player. He's been okay, but I don't think he's been what we kind of hoped he would be from a production standpoint. I mean, that's fine, but Teoscar Hernandez not being a Blue Jay, considering that the team needed to be insulated far more from where we are now, I think that's a problem. And I think to the rest of Adam's points, those are just more points on more of an indictment on the roster construction by this team, right? 590-590, name and location. I'll read a couple more texts here before we go. Let's see. There was one from Rico. Where was it, Rico? Here it is. Who are the untouchables on this team if the team decides to go to rebuild and not a retool? I mean, I hate to say that Bo is not untouchable, but I don't think he is anymore. You know what I mean? Like you hope he turns around. I don't think it's that it's for lack of trying or that he doesn't care. He really is struggling. But I mean, if you're going to get a lot more from him, or if he really is going to test the free agent market because he's a shortstop and shortstops generally do that, then maybe you trade him and see what you get back for him, which sounds insane to say given where we were like even at this point last year, right? But I mean, I don't think Bo's untouchable anymore. I honestly think the untouchables might legitimately be Bo, or pardon me, might only be Vladdy and Horwitz and Varsho and maybe a couple out of the Buffalo boys, honestly. But true, like the truth is, if Juan Soto can get traded not once but twice, then really there's no untouchables, really. Like, in all honesty, there should be no one who's untouchable. There was a text here from, let's see if I can find it, because a lot of texts just came in. Let's see. Oh, Casey in Bradford. If you're the GM and you decide to start selling, who do you ship out? Well, I mean, at this point, I would actually be disappointed if they did not sell the UFAs. And I'm not saying they're going to get a whole ton of top 50, top 10 prospects from any individual team for selling Kevin Kiermaier or Justin Turner or Yusei Kikuchi or Jimmy Garcia or Danny Jansen. Those are the five guys that probably need to be traded. But I will say, if they don't even try to trade them, and I know when it comes to trades, there are probably like 1,000 trades they pick up the phone and discuss with other teams that we'll never find out about, because that's just how it is in all sports. But if they don't trade a significant amount of those guys, I'll be disappointed. Honestly, I will be, because it feels like they, you know what, it's not that they're not trying, but it just feels like if you accept this season is lost 10 games under 500 a week before the All-Star break, then you got to do something, right? Trevor Richards, maybe as well. Maybe he's a guy you could entertain trading. It's tough to trade like one of two members of the Circle of Trust, but I'd probably trade him too. You could probably get, like, we've seen, I don't think he'd fetch as much as the Jordan Hicks trade fetched last year, but given how he is able to be used in terms of he's not a lefty, but can be used like a lefty, he has that nasty change. I think a lot of teams could find a place for Trevor Richards in their bullpen. I mean, he's not going to be like the closer for any team probably, but I think there are a lot of teams and championship teams can always use more bullpen pitching. There's probably no limit to how much bullpen pitching you can use if you're hoping to contend for the World Series. Absolutely, I would trade Trevor Richards if you get something good back for him. But I think at a minimum, you got to trade the UFAs. You have to. Maestro on Vancouver Island, how close to 500 do you think this team will be at the end of the year? Will they hover around 10 games under for the second half, or is it going to get worse? I don't think it'll get that much worse, but then again, you know, we have seen a lot of times this year where it feels like the Jays have hit rock bottom and then you just get handed a shovel and you keep going, right? So, I will say it's not going to be quite that bad, but you know what? You never know. As Blair says there, which sometimes these days feels like a threat instead of a good thing, but you get to do it all over again tomorrow. Thanks for being with me, everyone. I appreciate the texts, appreciate the call from Adam, appreciate you being with us. on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Sudbury on Regent Street and on LaSalle Boulevard. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Show. That does it for us. We are out of here. Jesse Rubinoff will be in with me all weekend long for the rest of this series in Seattle. Thankfully, these next couple of games are at a more humane hour for those of us on the East Coast. Appreciate you guys, everyone. Have a great night. We'll talk to you later.